I'm Sharon Martin, producer and narrator of Snapped. Every week, we tell you the stories of women who make poor choices, commit a brutal crime, and end a life. Some of the most interesting cases are the ones where we hear the woman tell that story herself.
He got out of the passenger side and was walking around. The driver's side. When I shot him. And then he started running down the road. So I shot him again.
That's Carol Kopenkoski admitting to the October 2012 death of her husband, Lyle. But that admission didn't take place until January of 2014.
She denied it for so long, almost 2 years. Denied. Didn't do it. And then all of a sudden, there we are in a room with her, debriefing her. And she's graphically walking us through every step of this.
That's Stuart Fenton. He's the chief assistant prosecutor for Emmett County, Michigan. You may remember him from several other Snapped episodes in that area. He inherited the Kopenkoski case when he took office.
It was the biggest case in the office at the time. We live in northern Michigan. There's not a lot of violent crime here.
Like everyone in the Petoskey area, Fenton knew the basics of the case. Carol and Lyle Kopenkoski were childhood friends who had lived in the area all their lives. They began dating in high school, and they married in 1973. By most accounts, they shared many interests, had a happy marriage, and were a typical rural Michigan couple. Early on October 2, 2012, a chilly Tuesday just days after their 39th wedding anniversary, Carol and Lyle left their home in Lyle's truck. Carol says she returned home on foot. Lyle never came home again.
I packed his lunch, I made his coffee. I went out and got the truck. I brought it out of the garage. Then when he was ready to leave the house, I said, I want to go for, drop me off somewhere so that I can walk back, get back with my exercise.
Later that night, Carol called Lyle's brother Carl to say she was worried that Lyle had been missing all day. Carl immediately went looking for his brother and found Lyle's truck on an isolated country road not far from their homes. Lyle's lunch pail was in the front seat. There was coffee in the cup holder. But Carl didn't see Lyle, so he called 911. A team of officers and search dogs combed the area and found Lyle's body nearby in a ditch. He'd been shot 5 times. No gun or shell casings were found at the scene, and Lyle's wallet was missing.
Hardly anybody would be traveling that road, especially that time of day. Extremely unlikely there would be some sort of random carjacking and murder out there.
At the time, Carol told investigators that she had no idea who had killed Lyle or why. Her cooperation with the authorities quickly ended, though. It was clear she was the last person to see him alive, and as his wife, she was naturally the first suspect. Investigators and Snapped viewers alike know the killer is almost always someone close to the victim.
Carol Kopenkoski was smart. On the very second day of the investigation, she hired an attorney and stopped talking.
There was enough circumstantial evidence to arrest Carol for Lyle's murder, but she quickly made bond, which made for a strange situation in Petoskey.
Petoskey's a small town. You run into everybody. I'd run into her at the Myers grocery store shopping. I would never have any interactions with her, but there she was, just acting like nothing happened and that she's not accused of murder and she didn't kill her husband, buying her groceries like a normal person.
Meanwhile, Stuart Fenton kept building the case against Carol, trying to gather enough evidence to convince a jury of what everyone involved in the case suspected, that she was guilty.
It was a totally circumstantial case. There was no confession. There was no eyewitness. It was a thin circumstantial case. There were just some odd circumstances that all seemed to point at her. So my job was to look at it with a fine-tooth comb and try to put together all those small pieces so that I could make a compelling argument to the jury that, in fact, Carol Kopenkoski killed her husband.
By January of 2014, Stuart Fenton had enough evidence, and Carol Kopenkoski knew it. That's when she sat down with him to give her deposition, admitting to her role in the murder of her husband.
You have to be completely truthful with us, disclose all the facts, which may incriminate other people, but it has to be completely truthful, not just about your involvement, but about everybody's involvement. You understand that?
Yes.
All right, well, I guess I'm just going to start by asking you to tell us what happened from the beginning.
Well, like, Monday night, he was all screwed up. Like I said, when I got home, I don't know, I've never seen him like that, but he kept me up all night and just started irritating me.
Carol said Lyle couldn't or wouldn't sleep that night, that he kept wanting to go to work. Around 5 o'clock on the morning of October 2nd, she said she prepared his coffee and lunch and asked to ride with him some of the way. She would walk back. She drove the truck to the spot where it was later found by Lyle's brother Carl and the investigators. And when Lyle got out to take his place behind the wheel,
I was walking around the driver's side when I shot him. And then he started running down the road. So I shot him again.
Go on, take your time. How many times did you shoot him?
Five.
Where was the last shot?
Head.
Did you have to move him at all, or did he just come to rest in his final spot there in the ditch? That's a yes.
Yes.
Was anybody else out there with you at the time?
No. I just can't believe it.
Well, you've been in denial for a long time. You're doing the right thing by getting this off your chest. So then what did you do after that?
I walked home.
It was chilling to sit there in a small room and listen to her admit how, after she parked his truck on the side of the road, she starts shooting him as he's walking towards the driver's side to go to work. And then he starts running and she continues shooting until he's down in the ditch and he's begging for his life and says something to the effect of, "We can work this out. We can work this out." And basically what she says is, "It's too late for that." Boom. Shoots him in the head one last time. Chilling. Premeditated, deliberate, cold-blooded.
And it was clearly premeditated because Carol took a loaded gun with her that morning. When investigators searched the house after the murder, they found the empty case for a .38, the same caliber as the murder weapon.
Okay. What did you use? The .38 that you got from your father?
I didn't get it from my father.
Who'd you get it from?
That was one that I had just bought.
You had just bought it?
It was like 15 years ago.
Oh, so you'd had it for a while.
Yeah, it's been in my safe.
Was it unregistered? Is that the gun that a couple witnesses you showed to and talked about as a good throwaway gun to be used in a crime?
Yep.
It's a little shocking that Carol had been showing off the gun and joking about using it as a murder weapon, and then actually uses it as a murder weapon. Not something you hear about every day, even when you work on crime shows. But it wasn't even the only time that Carol telegraphed her intention to kill her husband. The evidence that finally broke the case, that convinced her to make a deal with the prosecutor, was the claim that she had tried to hire someone to kill Lyle. A man referred to in this case only as Mr. Woods.
A month or two before trial, out of the woodwork, the case was broke by this gentleman who came forward, Mr. Woods, who in essence told us that Carol Kapankowski had tried to hire him to kill Lyle.
I might have said something like, "Do you want to do a job for me or get rid of Lyle?" I could have probably said, "Get rid of Lyle." I said, "Shoot somebody for me."
Did you contact anybody else about killing Lyle after Mr. Woods said he wouldn't do it?
No, I mean, there was just such a short time in between.
Carol had given him pictures of Lyle's truck and license plate and a map to their house.
He had very specific information that was corroborated by the evidence that he still had. And so after that information and evidence came forth, what I did was I filed a motion to revoke her bond.
But back to Carol's confession. After she gunned down her husband on the side of the road, she proceeded to very carefully cover her tracks. She says she threw Lyle's wallet into a garbage dumpster and hid the gun in a garage on someone else's property, just across the street from their home.
It was there probably, I'm gonna guess, 2 weeks, 3 weeks at the most. And then I took it and I cut it up.
You cut it up? How did you do that?
The hacksaw.
Then one night, 2 or 3 weeks after that, Carol says she borrowed a truck.
Why did you do that?
Because I figured mine had a tracer on it.
She drove the borrowed truck to the Mackinac Bridge and threw the pieces of the gun over the side.
You did it at night, I see. Was anybody with you?
Yes.
Who?
Actually, John was with me when I did that.
John Ernst. He wasn't driving, though?
No, I was driving.
Okay. Well, what was your relationship with John Ernst?
We had a relationship.
You had a romantic relationship.
Yeah.
You heard that right. Carol had a boyfriend. Fenton says they learned about John Ernst early in the investigation from Carol and Lyle's phone records. On the day of the murder, Carol never tried to call Lyle, even though she told his brother she was worried about him when he never came home.
She never called him. We had their cell phone records, and Carol never even attempted to call him to find out where he was, if he was okay, even after the police got involved. Until she was specifically asked by the police to call his cell phone, that was the first time that she actually tried to reach him. Yet she called her boyfriend, John Ernst, several times that day.
Carol, Lyle, and John had been friends for most of their lives, and Carol and John carried on an affair for at least 5 years. And though Lyle knew about the infidelity, he apparently didn't do much to try to stop it. Stuart Fenton says John's place in this love triangle made him suspicious.
He was always a suspect when I first came to town. That was my number one question, was John Ernst involved with this?
But John had an alibi for the day that Lyle was killed. He was at work in Tennessee. Fenton knew John was involved somehow, and that all the phone calls between Carol and John on the day of the murder pointed to this. Getting Ernst into a face-to-face interview, though, proved to be difficult.
Since he would never really submit to that, we resorted to what we call an investigative subpoena. And in Michigan, it's kind of like a one-man grand jury. We can get the judge to authorize us to subpoena a witness and bring them in and question them under oath. So finally, we did that with John Ernst as one of the turning points of the case.
They gave Ernst immunity to try to convince him to answer their questions.
He denied ever sleeping with her, having a sexual relationship with her, a romantic relationship with her, denied her ever having discussed the murder of Lyle with him, and denied helping her in any way cover up the crime.
But Ernst had apparently given them nothing but lies when he was under oath.
That was a very upsetting part of the case, is having a subpoena in a witness who you know has information about the case and lies to your face under oath over and over and over, even after you've given him immunity.
Carol's testimony threw his perjury into sharp relief. John was with her when she borrowed the truck and threw the pieces of the murder weapon off the Mackinac Bridge. And there was more.
And you've had a chance to talk to your attorney.
And did you misspeak? Was there something that you wanted to change in... from what we discussed a few minutes ago, that I told you what you said, and you said you thought you'd said something different,
right.
But...
about throwing the gun out.
What?
Because John threw it out because I was driving.
Okay. Why didn't you tell us that a few minutes ago?
No.
So John threw the gun out. John knew what he was throwing out. It was pieces of a gun, right?
Yes.
And he knew that that was the gun that was used in the murder.
Yes.
Carol wouldn't be the only one spending time in prison for the death of Lyle Kopankowski. Ernst took a plea deal on the perjury charge and was sentenced to 2 to 15 years in prison. As for Carol's statement that Lyle was using drugs and alcohol the night before he was killed.
His blood test did not confirm that he was so out of it, drunk and high. He was not even over the legal limit to drive. So her story doesn't even make sense.
And Fenton says there may have been a financial motive.
She made an inquiry about the insurance right away. There was not a huge insurance policy, but it was money. It was something. There was some financial motive there.
Carol also alleged that physical abuse in her marriage was a reason for killing Lyle. But Fenton said she had never before mentioned anything about abuse.
It was only after her sentence that she all of a sudden is coming forth with these claims that she was an abuse victim.
About the physical abuse. What do you mean by that?
I would say it's only been, you know, half a dozen times.
What happened?
He would just push me around.
Like how? Never leave any marks on you?
Yeah, I had bruises.
Did you ever call the police?
I always figured we could work it out.
Though the alleged abuse was hardly the only issue in the Kopenkoskis' marriage, Carol also revealed that her affair with John Ernst was not her first marital infidelity. The prosecutor even asked if she and Lyle fought about John.
So was that a pretty regular topic of controversy in your marriage?
Well, it came up quite a bit, as long as, you know,
was Mr. Ernst the topic of discussion on any of the occasions where you just said that you were pushed around?
No, Lyle was a jealous one anyways. I mean, I could talk to other guys and he would get mad at me.
But Lyle had a reason to be jealous, didn't he? But John Ernst wasn't the first person that you cheated on.
Right.
With, right?
Right.
Okay.
And he was aware of that?
Yes.
Still, at the end of her deposition, Carol's behavior didn't make a lot of sense to Stuart Fenton. Why didn't she divorce Lyle instead of killing him?
When we asked her that, she said, there's no history of divorce in my family. Is there a history of murder in your family? Makes no sense. No history of divorce, so you resort to murder?
But like so many other cases, the reason why Carol killed Lyle might not be clear to anyone other than Carol.
She never gave a great motive. What she claimed was that she was just tired of it, that Lyle drank a lot and she couldn't cure him of drinking and she was irritated and annoyed and just couldn't take it anymore. She tried unsuccessfully to claim some sort of vague abuse, which none of us believe is even possible. Anybody who knows Lyle would tell you he's a gentle creature. He went to work every day. He's a great guy. He was probably drinking because of his frustration with her cheating on him and not being home for him. So it was, I think her motive had more to do with just getting him out of the way so she could do whatever she wanted with John Ernst or anybody else.
In exchange for her full confession, prosecutors agreed to let her plead guilty to second-degree murder with a sentence of 18 to 35 years.
You know, we could have taken a harder line and insisted on a trial and gotten her convicted of first-degree murder, which is what she's guilty of, and she would have been convicted of first-degree and died in prison, mandatory life in prison.
Instead, Carol will be eligible for parole for the first time when she's 78 years old.
So for all practical purposes, we achieved everything we wanted to. It's highly likely that she'll die in prison, and if not, she'll be an old lady by the time she ever gets out.
This podcast was produced by Sharon Martin, Deborah Allen, Chrissy Kuiper, Ashley Overton, and the Snapped production team. Edited and mixed by Dylan Turflinger and David McNeil, and produced for Oxygen by Jupiter Entertainment.